You've finally broken loose from work. Three friends, one tea time, and then the text. Honey, there's water in the basement. Not exactly how you pictured your Saturday. That's when you call us, Cincinnati Insurance. We always answer the call, because real protection means showing up, even when things are in the rough. Cincinnati Insurance. Let us make your bad day better. Find an agent at CINFIN.com.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another phenomenal episode with another phenomenal guest. And before we get to my guest this week, Mark Allen, the phenomenal Ironman triathlete, I want to talk about my journey that's coming up here in the next couple months. I am off to Mount Everest. Anybody that wants to follow my journey can do so at www.markpattisonnfl.com. I will have a link on there where you can actually follow me all the way up the mountain, all the way back down, so you can actually track my progress. And I always would totally appreciate if you go in and give the show a ratings and review. The show continues to gain in popularity, which is really amazing. So I'm very grateful for everybody that listens. Again, it's not about me. It's about the amazing people that I bring on the show, and they tell their stories. And so love passing these journeys of these people, amazing people doing incredible things, along to you. So I want to open the show today. I'm broadcasting all the way over here in Kauai, one of the many islands here in Hawaii, and broadcasting back along the Pacific Ocean as well to Santa Cruz area. Mark Allen, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I just got out of the water about an hour ago, had some really good winter surf. We've had a good run of it here, and that's kind of my go-to activity now. I live two blocks from one of the main breaks here in Santa Cruz. I just love it. I still run for conditioning, bike look for conditioning, do some functional strength stuff. So, you know, I'm on a different trajectory than I was when I raced. I'm 62 years old now, and so my goal is to just get out there each and every day and do something, stay active, keep my body healthy, keep my mind functioning. And peak performance and life health are two different kind of worlds, and they're both amazing worlds. But I covered the competitive aspect kind of the first half of my life. Now I'm on the second half, just exploring every day what I can do.
Well, let's talk about that, because so I'm one of those whacked out people who follow these niche sports that are out there. And for many years, I followed the Ironman. I always found it extremely intriguing. I know they do Ironmans now all over the world, but kind of the Super Bowl of Ironmans was on the Big Island outside of Kona. I've actually trained over there, and especially running down those lava fields right outside the airport. It gets smoking hot. So not only did you win it one time, two times, three times, you won it six times. And just a remarkable streak. So let me go back. And when we talk about the Ironman, we're talking about a 2.4-mile swim. We're talking about a 112-mile cycle. And then once you get off of all that, then you've still got 100 or 26 miles plus to actually run. And so to take that on, those different conditions, it's just remarkable. So go back to probably UCSD and tell me about, as a swimmer, like, how did you evolve into this world-class athlete?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I was a swimmer as a kid growing up. I saw the 1968 Olympics from Mexico City. It was the first Olympics that I ever saw on television, you know, back in the day when TV didn't have much to offer in terms of sport. I was mesmerized by the endurance, the long distance swimmers doing 1500 meters for the men, 800 for the women, you know, back in the day when they didn't think women could keep up with guys, you know.
Yeah.
So because it was amazing to me, because I could not even swim one lap across the pool. And so to see these people going back and forth and back and forth, doing it fast, just completely blew my mind. And about a month after that, there was a local swim team in Palo Alto where I grew up, and they were having tryouts. My mom goes, "Hey, just go there. See, you know, maybe there's something for you." That one tryout ended up being 12 years as a competitive swimmer, growing up age 10 all the way through 22, yeah, all through university. Excuse me, but I was very outstandingly mediocre as a swimmer. You know, I didn't set records. I didn't make it to the Olympic trials. I didn't you know, make it to NC2A Division I Nationals, nothing, none of that stuff. And so I, you know, in my mind, I kind of thought, well, I'm just sort of like this guy who loves sports, but I kind of have an average toolbox, I guess. And that doesn't bother me, you know, that's just fine. Some people are going to be the best and some are going to just do it because they love it. And that's what I did. 2 years after college, I saw the Ironman on Wide World of Sports, you know, back in the day when everybody would stop on Saturday to see what Jim McKay had to say about something incredible. And they were showing the Ironman triathlon, something that I had never heard of before. I didn't know what a triathlon was. I didn't know what the Ironman was. And, you know, he runs through what the distances were they were going to be covering that day. And I'm like, are you serious? You know, I thought, first of all, I thought, how many days does this event take? You know, and then he explains that it's, you know, they start at 7 and that the last person has to cross the line by midnight, 17 hours later, to be an official Ironman finisher. And I thought, there's no way. There's no way. But of course, there is a way. You know, most of the people actually did finish the race. And again, I was mesmerized because these seemingly ordinary people were doing this extraordinary thing. And I guess those kind of athletic challenges or disconnects in my brain is what gets me inspired. And about 2 weeks after watching that on TV, I thought, you know what? I have to go to that race and just see if I can be an Ironman finisher. And so about 9 or 10 months after I saw that Ironman on TV, 1982, as a 24-year-old, I was on the start line of the Ironman, and it was my journey to becoming the Ironman champion was certainly not automatic. You know, the first 6 years that I raced in Kona, I had decent races. I was third once, I was fifth twice, I was second twice. I could be in the lead halfway through the bike ride, at the end of the bike ride, halfway through the marathon with just a few miles to go in the marathon. But I always kept falling apart at the end and kept being passed by the same guy, Dave Scott, who was ended up also winning that race 6 times during his career. And so, you know, that was, you know, my wins are they're great stories, you know, but I think that for me anyway, the most empowering part of that journey that I had is that I didn't give up. You know, 6 years I went there, 6 years I didn't achieve what I ultimately wanted to do, which was to become the Ironman champion, when I saw that I had some talent in the sport. Mm-hmm. And so each year, after devoting an entire season to this one singular goal and falling short, I had to come back home, you know, head between my legs, somehow just pick up the pieces and ask myself, okay, am I going to go back again next year? And if I am, what am I going to do different so that the result is not the same as what I just got? And that was a really, really hard journey, but one that certainly in the end has made me a lot of who I am today, you know? So.
Oh, excuse me. No, I totally appreciate what you're saying. And let me back up. So I want to dedicate this episode to Kobe Bryant, right? And it's just, not only was he an amazing athlete, amazing person, but really showed all of us what the definition of grit was. And you and I are talking 2 days after his helicopter went down, mm-hmm. with his daughter. Mm-hmm. And it's been all over the news. And a lot of people know about that. But it's always one of those things that, you know, the further that you kind of get into somebody's life, the more you get to know them. And I always found, you know, my best moments really were in the moments of adversity and the choices that I had to make in my own life. There's this Kobe Bryant's top 10 rules for success: have a champion's mentality, outwork your potential, learn from failures, be a long-term thinker, find your passion, challenge yourself to grow, keep going, protect your dreams, be driven, and achieve greatness. And you did all those things, and certainly I can tell you that if I hadn't gone through hell and back early in my college career playing football at the University of Washington, I would not be the person I am today, being driven through trying to, you know, and actually becoming an NFL player, but now climbing these different mountains around the world. And there's these things that, you know, you need to be inspired, you know, early on from certain people. Maybe it was your mother. Maybe it was from watching Dave Scott or other guys in the early 80s racing, and you're going, you know, it's beginning to shape some possibilities for you. But at the same time, you know, I think we all need to go through those tests. And there's just too many people that give up. I have from time to time people coming up to me and saying, Mark, you know, you're inspirational about what you do. And I don't think I'm inspirational. I'm just the guy that took one step out the door and has been taking one step up the mountain. No different than you jumping in that pool and then you learning how to ride a bike and then getting your chops down in terms of having to run. And then really having, well, one of the things you talked about was you kept going through all these different struggles at the end of these races where all these other people were catching up to you and passing you, and just how frustrating. So it sounds like it was really the failures that really allowed you to surge forward and become a champion and all the things that you've done during your racing time and post-life.
Yeah. You know, just to, as you would say, back up for a moment, I've been asking myself, what is it about Kobe Bryant's death that has been so impactful for people? Because it was such a shock, you know, and I think it just, you know, for me personally, it really just brought home the fact that you don't know how much time you're going to have here. And, you know, one moment to the next, something can happen. I mean, we all have our life plan. We have our vision, our goals, our strategy, the things that we want to do between now and whenever then is for us. But it really just brought it home, like, you know what, don't waste a moment, because I don't know about tomorrow. I don't know what tomorrow will bring. I don't know if I'll be here tomorrow. And just how precious life is, that we have a certain amount of time. So what are you going to do with it? You know, are you going to succumb to that sort of lesser part of yourself that just says, it's not worth it. I want to take it easy. You know, I don't need this challenge, or I don't really need to follow that calling or that goal. But if you can step back for a moment, which is what I had to do each year at the end of the Ironman when I fell apart, was to step back and ask myself, does this still have importance to me? Does the dream to do something better than I've ever done it before in my life at this race still bring me the passion to get up in the morning and try? You know, if the passion's gone, then it might be time to move on. You know, only you will know, you know, when it's time to move on from the goals that you have. And same with me, because my friends and family, after 5-6 times of exploding on the course there, they're like, don't go back. It's not you. Go to the races where you've shown you can win and beat Dave Scott. And that, you know, there's something about Kona, the Big Island. It's too hot, the race is long, whatever it is, you know. And we have our friends, family that we rely on to tell us the things we're unwilling to see about ourselves, right? But when I stood back and just had those quiet moments, I'm like, you know what? I need to go there and have my best race. And I think that's kind of what probably Kobe's able to look back down now and say, you know what, it ended quicker than I thought, but I gave it my best and I gave everything I had. And there's a perfection in that. And when I talk about perfection, I'm not saying that everything goes right, but as you were saying, Mark, perfection is when we rise up above the challenges, when we take that next step, even when our goals or dreams might look impossible, when we just surrender to the fact that maybe the journey is going to take longer than we'd hoped and commit anyway. And that is what ultimately makes us better people, helps us to learn how to move through life with more grace and ease and efficiency and gratitude, really. And ultimately, I think that's what Kobe's death is done for me, is to really give me that feeling of, you know what, I'm really grateful for what I've been able to do, for the friends that I have, for the journeys that I've been on. And, you know, it's helped me to really rededicate just from the moment I get up in the morning, rededicate my life to doing what I can.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that you're talking about is, we're probably talking about semantics right now, but you know, everybody, you said everybody gets up and they have their vision and kind of where they want to go, and, you know, and life is short and all this stuff. Totally agree with what you said. I think the disconnect is, for me, a little bit, is that there's many people that don't actually have that vision of where they want to go because they're living, you know, kind of in that day-to-day moment. And for me, what's been really, really useful is to kind of have that vision board out there and write it down, because then, you know, everything that you're talking about, I know, I've never been in an Ironman, but I've got buddies who've been in it, and I know it's a long, painful grind. And for you to go train and get out of bed every day early in the morning when that comforter is over your head and that bed is warm, right? It's so easy just to say no. And if you don't have that strong why, which is one of the things that you were talking about, you know, it's so hard to get it going. And, you know, back to the Kobe thing, you know, it's tragic. And the one thing with him is you can say he didn't live a full life at 41 years old versus that most people, you know, who may live into their 80s or beyond, haven't lived a fraction of what he's been able to experience in his life. And everything is this champion mindset. And I think, you know, like you, to me at least, watching you on TV back in the day, you know, you had your sunglasses on and, you know, you're ripped out and you're running, you're coming out of the water and you're doing all these things. And the guys that I know have the strongest mindset in order to keep persevering through all the different challenges that you go through, because you're in pain and it's, you suffer. But the joy of then once you get on the other side, you know, for you, it took roughly your best time, I think, was 8 minutes and 7 seconds to do all this, you know, go all these different distances. And now once you get into like the ninth hour, the 10th hour, and you're in that kind of recovery phase, you're laying down, you don't have to do any more of the work. It's that satisfaction of what you did to accomplish that goal to get where you wanted to be. And you did it.
It's, you know, it's fulfillment on a deep level. And that's the part of sport that I, for lack of a better word, I call it very spiritual. You know, it's using sport to enhance who you are as a human being and to sort of just burn off your own laziness and adopt a more truthful way of existing. And what I mean by truthful is that you don't have to be the tough guy every day, but some days you do have to be the tough guy and you have to push beyond what you think you can to achieve those goals. And, but sport, as you know, as I'm sure anybody who's climbed Everest, I'm not a climber, so I can't attest to it personally, but it seems like that's such an interaction with nature in an incredible way, and certainly challenging and probably never predictable. And me personally, I love things that are challenging and not predictable. And certainly the Ironman is one of those. You know, you all of us line up on the start line. There's all these guys from all over the world who have put every bit of effort they have into getting ready because they want to be the champion. And we all have the same singular goal, but none of us knows how it's going to evolve and how it's going to unfold throughout the day, because there's so many unpredictable things: the wind, the heat, the humidity, how one guy's move disrupts the entire pack of cyclists, or a guy who goes off the front on the marathon that you never thought could pull away from you. You know, there's so many things like that. And for me personally, I would just surrender to what's going on the day and go, okay, this is not my ideal. You know, I'm 13 and a half minutes behind the leader coming off the bike or whatever it is. How do I deal with it? How am I going to pull it together? Big Island, I need your help here. This is tough, but I'm going to give it everything I have. And when we make those commitments to the things that are challenging, again, it's very empowering. It's spiritual. It connects us with life. It connects us to our deepest soul strength, you know, things that we would never learn about ourselves if we were just sitting on a couch.
Well, it's interesting to me. There's like this paradox going on, because when you were up and coming and you put this goal forth, and again, watching on TV, and now you're actually interacting, and now there's this champion that used to be, well, he was the Mark Allen before you became the Mark Allen, right? And he's the main guy. And so you're like in that trilogy Rocky series where you've got the, I can't remember what his name was, Clubber Lang or something, where he's going to go against Rocky, but now Rocky's become the champion. So what he doesn't see is where Rocky was when Rocky was up and coming and he was trying to take out Apollo Creed, right? So there's this whole mindset. And then the whole thing does a 180 shift when now you become the guy. And so again, the variable of other people now coming after your job, your title, right? And so you can equate that to business. You can equate that to personal things that you're doing, these athletic quests that you used to dominate. But there's this whole shift on how, once you get to the top, you know, how you maintain that excellence. And that also is a mindset, right? The mindset of getting there and the mindset of then staying on top of the mountain.
Yeah, you know, I coach a lot of triathletes these days, markallencoaching.com, and I tell all of them, look, some days you're going to win, some days you're not, some days you're going to struggle, some days it's going to flow and be easy, and you'll cross the line and go, wow, is it done already? And it's like they all have to be taken kind of with the same, if they're all done with the same focus, and you know, you've spoken about this, a champion's mindset. Yeah. I think what for me defines a champion's mindset is when somebody is truly just there to give the absolute best that they can, and they're not exactly concerned about what the outcome of the day is going to be like, but more making each and every moment in that game, in that match, in that race count. And you know, it's sort of like, as you do that, you're just chipping away at possibility, and you're putting little bits and pieces into this thing that at the end of the day might end up being this incredible success. It might be, you know, a Super Bowl ring. It might be Wimbledon. It might be an Ironman championship. It might be hitting, you know, finally making it to the top of Everest and making it back down successfully. Yeah. And I don't think people see that. A lot of people look at great moments and they see the moment, but they don't see this whole
process
and yeah, the inglorious work that went into, you know, thousands of hours of preparation that you never get a pat on the back for doing, because nobody sees it, nobody knows it other than you and your training partners. They see that great moment and they appreciate, yeah, that they love it inspires them, but it's this journey that is so precious in sport. And that's what I, you know, I tell that to, again, the athletes that I coach and people that I come in contact with business as well, because like you said, it is the same thing. If you can dig in and enjoy that day-to-day stuff that you do over and over and over and over and see that it's not, yes, it can be boring. It can be like, why am I doing this again? But if you see it as I'm putting the foundation to something great underneath me right now with each one of these phone calls that I make, with each one of these runs that I do, every time I throw myself in the pool, those little small steps, again, are almost as empowering as that big, great moment at the end of the day, end of the year, at the end of the season, where something incredible does gel into this one definable thing that we call success.
In terms of your career, and you look back, I know the first six, you know, you had near success, but you weren't the champion. And then you went on this roll for a long time. But in terms of adversity that you went through, what was one of the biggest setbacks, you know, during that period? I want to focus on the time that you're actually winning. Because again, what people on TV see is you coming across the goal line, right? And the finish line and being crowned and, you know, the glory of all that, but it's all the pain and the agony that you had to go through every year to lead up to that point. And over that 6-7 year period, you know, what is like a defining moment that really helped flip the switch and keep you going? Was there a moment like that for you?
Yeah, they're actually, you know, I was, we all have, in triathlon, it looks like it's an individual sport, right? But you have a team behind you. You have trainers, you have people who help you with massage, you have nutritionists, you have bike mechanics. You have this whole crew who's supporting your effort. And one of the people who really helped me with that is a gentleman named Brant Secunda. And he teaches a tradition from the Indians in central Mexico, the Huichol Indians. And it's a very simple tradition that enables you to really work with just getting your mind to be quiet, connecting with nature. I was saying, the Big Island is a very powerful place. You know, you have to deal with wind and heat and sun and tropics and humidity, and you have to figure out a way to be to surrender to this and just embrace it instead of going, this is too intense, I can't deal with it. And Brant really helped me to especially learn how to just get my mind to be quiet and trust. And so let me tell you where this came into play, probably more than any other place in my career. It was during my final Ironman in 1995. I was 37 years old. I was trying to win my sixth title there. Nobody had won the race as a 37-year-old before. And so I was I was trying to do something that I couldn't Google the answer for. You know, how do you win your sixth title as this old guy that all the young guys are just ready to chew you up and spit you out all over the lava? Because at 37, I was having to actually cut back on the total volume of training that I was doing because my body wouldn't be able to absorb the same volume that I'd done in the past. So I was going to have to train less and figure out how to go faster, because all the young guys, they're not getting slower. They're gaining more experience. They're getting faster. They're perfecting their skills as a triathlete. And so I'm thinking, okay, how am I going to outdo these guys? And the simplest answer that I could come up with is that I had to be able to get into that champion's mindset where you just shut off the chatter. You take a breath, you regroup, you get calm, you recommit to taking that next step, taking that next pedal stroke, no matter how impossible things look. Well, I came off the bike that year 13 and a half minutes behind the leader, who was a 24-year-old German soldier named Thomas Hellriegel. Nobody had closed a 13 and a half minute gap on the marathon to become the Ironman champion. So now, not only am I trying to win as the oldest guy ever, but I'm also having to close a gap that nobody had shown could be done. Mm-hmm. And so I started the marathon, and you know, there's thousands of people that are cheering. I did the math. I realized I had to make up 30 seconds a mile every single mile on this guy.
Which is brutal.
If I was going to catch him at the finish line, and it's like, that's impossible. There's no way. So the commitment that I made as I started out on the run course was to just try to make up an inch or a second every single step and just see how it would turn out. You know, I could wrap my mind around that. And so anyway, I headed out. There were thousands of people cheering. I was trying to keep a positive mindset and keep my mind quiet, you know, so that chatter that gets in the way, that derails you, I was trying to keep that at bay. And about a half mile into it, I crested a hill. There were three older women who were cheering and they were clapping and they're going, go Mark, go Mark, go Mark. He doesn't look so good. And that thought sunk in, and literally a few steps later, I felt so bad, I didn't even know if I could finish the race. And then all of the garbage that wasn't going to help me out started. You know, Hellriegel, he's so far ahead, I can't see him. He's 13 years younger, I can't win this thing. And finally, I remembered what Brant had said to me right before I left for the island. He said, get yourself to be quiet and just call out to the island when you need help. And it's like, so I just go, and there it was. There was the silence. And in silence, that's a champion's mindset. Because when you're quiet, you're tuned into everything going on. You stop judging what's happening. You stop looking at things as impossible. And you re-engage. And I realized, wait a minute, maybe I can't win this, but I'm going to just give everything I have. I'm going to cross the finish line. I knew this was going to be my final Ironman. And I thought, I have to be able to at least cross that line with my head held high, knowing that I gave everything I did, everything I could. And it just slowly evolved. Slowly, I made up time. Eventually, I did catch Thomas Hellriegel at mile 23 of the marathon, passed him, went on and won my sixth and final title. And
how far behind was he when you crossed the finish line?
2.5 minutes.
Wow.
Which sounds like a lot, but if you figure it as a percent of the total amount of time we race each other, the difference in our times was less than 0.5%. Very, very small difference. And so that was such a defining moment, because early in the marathon, you know, I was ready to quit, you know, right after I started feeling like I can't even finish. And it would have been so easy to say, yeah, you know, I've won five of these. I don't need to finish. I can just walk away and everybody will remember me as five-time champ, right? Well, no, I would have been remembered as the guy who quit. And it looked impossible. But I got my mind to be quiet. Whew. That's regrouping. That's pulling back for a second, gathering your forces and saying, okay, what can I do? What can I commit to? I'm going to commit to finishing. That's a noble goal. That still has meaning to me. It may not be a win, but that has meaning. And I'll be able to walk away from the sport with my head held high. And because of that simple commitment that was not easy to make, but one that I did make, the whole race turned around. I'd made up time. I went from fifth to fourth to third to second, and then eventually made one final pass of my Ironman career at mile 23 of that marathon.
Yeah, incredible. I mean, really what you're committing to is just that, you know, take a step after step and not necessarily the whole race. Because it I mean, this is such a metaphorical thing in life of about trying to take on so much, it becomes overwhelming. And so people back up and they don't continue and go through and follow through with what they originally set out to do. This reason I always talk about New Year's resolutions, right? Because those are typically things that you make because you haven't accomplished something what you want to accomplish the year before, and after about 4 months you quit or give up. That's what most people do.
Yeah.
Right. And really this is it's really more about a life commitment and a life goal. And there's all these little micro steps along the way that you hit that help propel you forward. And then you can realize your dreams. And I continue to say this. I mean, I know that not everybody can play in the NFL, just like not everybody can go and be a champion of the Ironman, but people can try. And I've seen people, I've turned on the TV in years past, I've seen 80-year-old people that are, I think you said, you know, you got to finish within 12 or 15 hours or something, that they're on that, you know, like the mm-hmm. last person coming to the line, it's pitch black and people are cheering them on. And they'll never be a champion in a million years, but there's so many just average people doing incredible things. And to me, and by the way, to me, that's inspirational.
Totally. I mean, the best part for me, the best part of the day at Ironman is the last hour and a half, 2 hours, because that's when the folks are coming in that have been out there for 15, 16 plus hours. And, you know, that's a long time to spend with yourself. And when they come in through the darkness, you know, the course, the marathon yeah. course isn't lit. It's out, it goes out onto the lava on a highway, the Queen K Highway. And so they come finally back into town. All of a sudden there's lights and there's people cheering, and they come down the finish chute, and then they'll see somebody at the finish line waiting for them that's a friend or a family member. Yeah. And they just get this huge glow and smile, and you know, tears start coming down their face. And it's just, it's pretty cool. One of the coolest moments in sports, I think, you know, that last hour or so of the Ironman.
Is there a financial prize at the end, or is that through sponsorships that I'm sure you had?
Yeah, they've had prize money there since, oh, geez, mid 80s. It's not golf or tennis, but it's enough to certainly make it worthwhile. And then a lot of the athletes indeed have endorsements with sporting companies or other companies. And so it's, you know, it's financially viable to make a living, certainly. And yeah, but like I used to be sponsored by Nike, and I tell them, look, I know you guys pay me and I know you pay a lot of athletes, but I go through more pain per dollar earned than any of the other folks there. So,
yeah, there's no question.
They laugh at that one. So,
yeah, I've got a buddy, Michael Blue. I don't know if you know him. He won Ironman at 50, or in that category, over mm-hmm. 50. And I can't imagine, well, running at number one, but you know, doing anything those types of distances at anything over 50 years old, it's just the wear and tear on your body and your knees and everything else. So it's incredible. I want to ask you, and I think we've kind of covered a little bit about some of this, but you've got these three principles that surround the art of Ironman success. And it looks to me like these things could really apply to anything that you do: clarify, adjust, and complete. So tell me just a little bit more about those three. When people, and let's take, you know, the Ironman out of it for just a minute, and let's apply that to anything that somebody wants to go out and do. Because I mean, most of the people that listen to this pod, and there's a lot of people that listen now and exposed to a lot of people worldwide, and they're really are the feedback I get or the inspiration they get from, you know, hearing from people like you. And again, not all these people are playing in the NFL, and not all these people are going to run the Ironman. But they're trying to make this relatable to where they are in life and what they're trying to do to accomplish their goals. And sometimes people have a hard time like getting off the couch mm-hmm. and taking that first step forward.
Yeah, well, the first of those is to clarify. And when I talk about that, it's clarifying the work that your goals are asking you to do to achieve the success that you're after. And this can be very different than what somebody's comfortable doing, for mm-hmm. example. You know, We let's say you have a goal, whatever it is. Maybe it's a certain level of production in your business. Maybe it's a place you want to get to in your relationship with your partner, with your children. And so it's like, okay, you have in your mind, this is what I'm willing to put into it. And then you have to step back and ask yourself, clarify, what is the work, the goal that I'm after, actually asking me to do to get that success. And it wasn't until I asked myself, what is the training the Ironman wants me to do to be the champion, that I actually went from training a lot to doing the right kind of training to actually be truly fit for that one particular race. And so it might stretch you, because all of a sudden you might go, wait a minute, if I just keep doing what I'm comfortable doing here, I am never going to achieve that goal, that level of success in my business, that place that I want to get to with my children, with my partner in a relationship. And so clarify the work your goal is asking you to do to accomplish the success that you are after. That will change you from being busy to effective. And certainly in the world of business, being effective is very key. If you want to double your production, you're not going to work twice as many hours. You have to become more potent at what you're doing each and every moment. The second is to be willing to adjust your strategy based on how it's working in that very unpredictable environment called the real world. I mean, we set out on a journey and we say, okay, I think it's going to take me 6 weeks or 6 months or a year to get to where I want to be. And as you go, you know, keep assessing along the way, and it may require that you adjust. You know, you fine tune the course, you turn left, you go right, you go around some obstacles, you jump over barriers and things that get in the way. And so adjusting is also, it's about change. You know, a champion have this focus. It's, they see where they're at and they see where they want to go. And they're trying to go the shortest distance, the straightest line, but they're also willing to move sideways when they need to adapt, to bend, to do something new and different, to change their approach based on its effectiveness. That's the willingness to adjust. Clarify the work, be willing to adjust that work as you go through and see how it's actually really working. And then the third word that you mentioned is completion, complete. Having a commitment to completion says, I will do those very ordinary, mundane things day in and day out that ultimately will take me to those incredible levels that I'm after. So as a triathlete, I had to be really good at swimming, right? So January 1st, my commitment, get back in the pool after an off season. I swim up one side of the swim lane, 25 yards, do a flip turn, come back the other side of the lane. In 35 seconds, I have seen the entire swim course. I'm going to do about 50,000 more times.
Yeah.
Now, you can look at that as very boring, or know that each time I do that, that's empowering, because I am getting more fit with every time I do that. And so that's a commitment to completion, doing the boring, ordinary stuff that most people will bail on because it's not exciting. It's not, you know, rewarding in the moment, but in the end, it will be incredible. A commitment to completion also says, let me step back here and ask myself, why does this goal that I'm after have importance to me inside, deep inside? Why am I going to show up at the office every day? Why am I going to put in all that training to go to Ironman one more time, one more year? Why does this have importance? And it's not so much necessarily, why does the end goal have importance, but what is it about this journey that has importance for me to embark on and stay committed to? And so when we have these three elements, you know, really looking at the work it's going to take, be willing to be pliable and adjust and adapt as we go along through our journey, and then ultimately knowing what's going to be satisfying for me each and every day along this journey, even on the days where maybe I don't accomplish exactly what I hope to do. Maybe days I get more out of it than I hope to, but why does this journey have meaning for me to try? And when we have those three elements, it's like this complete package that can really propel us to places that we never would have been able to get to otherwise. If I had just done the training that was easy for me, I would have never won Ironman. If I had not been willing to adjust how I did my training and do things that were very uncomfortable, I would not have won the Ironman. If I had not, as I got ready for my seventh Ironman, asked myself, why does this have meaning to me? And come up with the answer, which at the time was, I may not be able to win it, but I want to go back and have my best race. So my journey in 1989, as I got ready for my seventh Ironman, was to go and just have a good, solid race. And that ended up being the first of six victories that year.
Yeah. So you've been in hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of races all over the world. When you put those three words together, clarify, adjust, complete, and I'm not talking about you now because you are the champion, you're the rock star. I'm asking you this question, like, what's the most amazing example, the most incredible person that you saw? It could have been the 85-year-old person. It could be somebody with no arms or no legs or something. I don't know. I'm making this up. But what's the most amazing that they had so many different things going against them that they had no business being in that race, and what they did was just an amazing feat of just incredible mindset and being committed to complete the mission of getting across the finish line?
That's an easy one for me because it was at this past year's Ironman where I saw what I thought was the most inspiring human being story ever at the race. And it was an athlete named Roderick who he was born with legs that eventually they cut the legs off above the knee. So he's a double above knee amputee. Yeah. And his mother, she had the insurance that she had covered walking legs, but early on when he was a kid, he wanted to run, but the insurance wouldn't cover running legs. And so they actually had to live in a homeless shelter for 3 years to qualify for the type of insurance that would buy him running legs. And eventually that happened. You know, he's African American. He learned to swim. He got excited about cycling and running. He met another above knee amputee, double amputee, who had done triathlons, and eventually they started training together. And he became the first person above knee, double amputee, to cross the Ironman finish line running on those legs. And as what he could have chosen to do was to use a hand cycle for the marathon, which means that he would have finished the marathon in 2.5 hours. They're very fast.
Yeah.
However, he said, I want to run it. I want to do it on my legs. And so it took him, you know, whatever, 4.5, 5 hours. He finished. And when he came across the line, he charged across the line. It was about, I don't know, somewhere around 11 at night, 11:30, something like that. You know, plenty of time before the absolute cutoff. But he charged across that line. And when he came across, you could feel this momentum of years of history in his life of what he and his mother did to get him to the point where he could be an Ironman finisher. I mean, it was just, there was not one person there who didn't have chills on their skin and tears coming down their face. You know, if you search it, Google it, you'll see it and you will be inspired by it.
Wow.
And he's an incredible guy. You know, he's young. He's just super humble and, great human being.
What is your role now with the Ironman?
I do ambassador work for them. So I go to their championship events, their half Ironman, full Ironman distance championships each year. I go to some of the functions that they have around the race and talk to athletes and tell my stories. And I do that with Ironman, with a number of companies that I work with. Again, I have my coaching, markallencoaching.com. Brant Secunda and I teach a workshop called Fit Soul, Fit Body. You can see what those are all about, fitsoulfitbody.com. And in that, we really address the whole package of who we are as people, you know, your emotions and how to keep your body physically healthy and how to have a positive mindset and how to use all of that to just live life healthier and happier. And through that, you know, we do workshops several times throughout the year here in the U.S. We've really helped people to embrace just a better, not better, but a more complete way of looking at life. It's like, how can I just make this all work? You know, when my body's healthy, my mind is healthier and I feel more positive. When my mind is in a better space, I want to take better care of my body. And when I take better care of my body, I want to get outside. I want to get off of the couch. I want to engage with my community. I want to be a part of great things going on at my work. And it's just this whole thing that feeds itself.
I don't know why people don't understand that whole concept. Seriously. I mean, I've been a gym rat all my life, you know, and so I lead a very healthy lifestyle. And again, as you just said, all these pieces are connected. They're dominoes that go around in a circle. And, you know, you want to eat better, you want to sleep better, the things that you put inside your body, you become much more aware of. The things that you shop for, when you start exercising, you see body transformation. They're all, you know, you're happier and all this stuff. I mean, you've got this book that you've done, which fits in this fit soul, fit body, 9 keys to a healthier, happier you. I mean, who wouldn't want to do that, right? I mean, it's just like, makes no sense. But these things aren't a pill, right? It takes work. And that's the biggest thing. And that's where it comes full circle. Again, back to clarify, adjust, and complete. Because you can't get there if you're not willing to have that daily discipline and put in the work and go for it. And that's what you did. And it's been a remarkable career. So congratulations to you on that.
Thank you, Mark.
Really amazing. Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, I just want to, one last time, where can people find you? You mentioned it earlier on the show, but I just want to make sure that that's very key, because you're a guy that can really help, I think, a lot of people get to that ultimate summit, their summit, and what they're trying to do. And I think there's, you know, you've lived it, and that's the best way to learn from somebody who's actually walked the walk and talked the talk.
Yeah, you can find my coaching at markallencoaching.com. I work with another gentleman, Scott Zagarino, who he's great at marketing, but the thing he's really good at is helping me get out there and tell the stories of my career in a way that have sort of reinvigorated people's just wanting to dream of something better. Yeah. You know, so he has an agency, Scott Zagarino Agency. But anyway, Mark Allen Coaching, Scott Zagarino, and then also fitsoulfitbody.com for the workshops with Brant Secunda and myself. And yeah, and you can always, if any of you want to email me, you have a question, some of this is like sparking something, but you want to know more, just email me, mark@markallencoaching.com. I'm accessible. I'm not a hermit. I love to help people, interact with people. And Mark, I'm going to be following you all the way up Everest, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. No, I can say that too for anybody listening. I mean, I don't have a big team of people who, you know, put on the production and all these things and go out and find the guest and do all the research. That's all me. And when I reached out to you, you just made this super easy to do. You're always super responsive. And that just goes a long way. It makes doing this, you know, fun. And when I have to chase people around the blog, it makes it very difficult. Bottom yeah. line. But all right. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on. You know, the podcast for me has given me access to guys like you. And this has been a gift, which I never thought I'd have. And so to sit here and be talking to a 6-time world champion of the Ironman, Mark Allen, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Okay, buddy.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.